Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Football Friday, ready for the weekend. Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sean Carey here, and Steve will be there in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our email is stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to our free podcast. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Search Steve Jones Show. So a lot going on today with you live till 5. We'll also have Emily Giambalvo from the Washington Post and our weekly Pro Football Focus segment with their senior college football analyst Cam Meller. Since we weren't on yesterday because of the Phillies, we'll have Cam's segment with Steve today. And also, Steve, myself, and Steve's brother Kevin Jones at 4:35, we will have our NFL and college football picks for week number 2. And, of course, our Friday edition brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Great specials now through Tuesday. Milwaukee's best light, and Milwaukee's best ice. 24-pack cans, just $9.49. And Genesee Oktoberfest 12-pack cans, $7.97. That and so much more at Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Penn State tomorrow night here on WKOK, beginning at 6 with the tailgate show. And the kickoff just after 7:30 between the Nittany Lions and Buffalo. Let's replay Steve's conversation with the voice of the Buffalo Bulls, Paul Peck.
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you for the compliment coming from you. That means an awful lot. So thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about this team. I think Lance has done just a terrific job with this program. But it's also, because it's a MAC program, means that you will be occasionally, excuse the word, poached. It's the college basketball model. You see that all the time with Buffalo basketball. How tough has it been, program-wise, to build something but then have parts taken away?
Well, this year has been the most challenging of the years, and not only because of the poaching. You know, I mean, the Bulls had their first ever player enter the NFL draft early, and that was quarterback Tyree Jackson. So, you know, all of a sudden thinking that he was coming back as the reigning MAC player of the year on offense, coming back, and he makes the decision to choose to go to the NFL. So that sort of got the ball rolling, and then I think reacting to that then prompted who would have been the Bulls' best receiver this year, KJ Osborne, to transfer to Miami, where he's a captain and a starter for the Hurricanes. And that probably prompted his best buddy and former high school teammate, All-MAC Tyler Mabry, to decide to go to Maryland. So you sent your quarterback, goes out early. You sent four other players to NFL training camps this year, and two of your best weapons on offense transferred to Power 5 schools. That's the curse of being a really good MAC team and recruiting really well, because that's not the norm at the MAC level to have that many guys be desirable either by Power 5 schools. So that's a tribute to what Lance and the staff have done on the recruiting front. So yeah, it's been a bigger year of transition than a lot of us thought it would be. You know, I mean, there are times when you drift back to the moment to say, boy, what would this game look like if Tyree Jackson, KJ Osborne, and a couple of the other guys are playing for the Bulls? You might say, boy, there's an upset, a better upset potential on this one.
No question. And they almost lost Jared Patterson too, correct?
No, not that I'm aware of. Okay. I think, he and his brother are sort of a tandem there.
Well, the twins are the leaders, right?
They are. How about sophomore captains? Among the five captains, two sophomores. That's pretty amazing. And they're great kids, and their backstory is amazing, that James, the linebacker, was being recruited by much higher-level schools than Jarrett, the running back, was. But James said, no, we're going together. And I jokingly asked James during an interview last year, I said, well, what happened if Alabama called and wanted you? And he kind of smiled and chuckled, and he said, well, I would have had to say, sorry, Mr. Saban. You know, I mean, it was a cool moment, but it gave you an idea of what this incredible story of the brothers, the twins, deciding to stay together. And not only do they stay together, but they gray shirt a half a year in order to remain timed outright because the Bulls did not have an available scholarship for a running back last fall, only for a linebacker. So it's a really cool story. Then they both emerge as incredible players, all conference level players, and really two of the more influential leaders on the team.
Let's talk about the style of this offense, because obviously Myers has had to run it and went through one game with it. But between Patterson and Marks, are they different style running backs, Paul, that bring a little something different to the table?
Yeah, no question, Steve. Jarrett is 5'7"-ish or so, you know, a little more of a jitterbug kind of a running back who actually will run through some tackles. Marks is a little taller and a little longer and a little more of a speed guy, and a lot of his big plays were outside runs last year. So they're a nice complement for the two of them, you know, and Kevin Marks had kind of taken over early in the year, and then he gets hurt, and then opened the door for Jarrett Patterson. And, you know, between the two of them, almost 2,000 yards rushing. And if Jarrett Patterson had won MAC Offensive or Rookie of the Year, it might have been Marks. So not only are they a nice combination of running backs with different styles, but they're both really good kids and both really emerging players. I wish I could tell you what the offense is going to look like this year with so many new parts and really not a very applicable test from their opener. We're all kind of wondering, you know, they don't bring much back at the receiver position. Right. The tight end who caught the two touchdown passes in their opener is probably their best pass catcher. I don't want to use the word receiver, but, you know, he'll probably be really their number one target in the passing game. What Myers brings to the table is sort of what a classic current day college quarterback is, which is, you know, a big arm, but the ability to run, the ability to run the read option, which is always what Lance Leipold had as his quarterbacks, and when he was winning all those Division III championships, was that type of quarterback. And then he kind of inherits Tyree Jackson here and then kind of runs the course of Tyree. So for a lot of us, we think this is really the ultimate quarterback that Lance likes to have, just kind of a matter of seeing how the kid develops.
All right. Defensively, the two bookend defensive ends plus Khalil Mack's younger brothers there as well. Is this the kind of group that can put pressure on a quarterback because of the edge rushers?
Yeah, I think so. Between the two of them, Kuntz and Riggins, who were backups last year, they combined for 8 sacks last year. Right. So they're really good pass rushers. Mack has been one of the most talked about players in the preseason, and not because of who his brother is, just because of his incredible improvement and sort of dedication. Last year was only his first year playing defensive end after being a linebacker. They used him on pass rush situations, and he's really developed his game, and maybe that has to do with the fact that he could pick up the phone and call the world's greatest pass rusher and ask him for advice. Maybe that helped a little bit too, but he's been great. Coaches have been raving about him. Had a sack in the game on Thursday. Consider him a co-starter. He's one of their captains, so it's going to be interesting to see how he develops. One of the assistant coaches, the defensive ends coach, said to me, he said, other than being 4 inches shorter, he's exactly the same as his brother, and that opened my eyes a little bit.
Yeah, I imagine it would. Now, we talked about Jarrett. What does make James Patterson a really good linebacker?
just tough and smart and athletic enough, you know, not crazy athletic, but athletic enough to be around the ball a lot, second on the team in tackle. From the very beginning of spring practice, which was the first time last year that we saw him, he was in the starting lineup and never left. You just knew he was just one of those football players. And, you know, and he did that last year. Now, he had Khalil Hodge, who was one of the nation's leading tacklers at the middle spot last year, so he had the ability to maybe freelance a little bit more. But he's just always around the ball and always sort of in the right place and usually always makes the play. So, you know, they may use him a little bit in the middle. They'll use him in the outside. We've seen both of those things from the first game and through practices. But he's just a rare, and those are the kind of guys you love to have, particularly at that position.
How much did you learn out of the opener? I mean, look, Penn State's expected to run Idaho out, does. Buffalo's expected to run Robert Morris out, does. So what do you know about your team?
You know, not a ton. I think going into it, we knew they had a really good offensive line and a really good running game, and we saw that. We knew they were incredibly inexperienced at wide receiver, and they only had one. We saw that. We saw a quarterback. Now, remember, Matt Myers is a local guy here, so everybody kind of knows about it. Matter of fact, here's your cool stat. We don't play high school football here as well as you guys do in Pennsylvania, but there's only been three local high school quarterbacks that ever had a 2,000-yard passing and 1,000-yard rushing season. One of them's Chad Kelly, Kelly's nephew, who's in the NFL.
Right.
Another is another local kid who's a really good player at a top 25 Division III school, and Matt Myers. So he led his team to a state championship in a 14-0 season. So we kind of knew what he was, and at least for me, I wanted to just see glimpses of that talent in the game on Thursday, and we did. He only threw 10 times, but he ran, you know, a 33-yard run and had a 40-yard pass and scored a touchdown and threw a couple, you know. So we saw glimpses of talent, and I think we knew, and that was confirmed a little bit in the game on Thursday, that the defense is really aggressive and is a really good pass rush. They gave up a couple big plays. Tackling wasn't great, but that happens sometimes. So that's a little bit of what we learned. And you know, even for us at our level, I think I look at it and go, well, you open up against not a very good FCS team. Now you're playing one of the best Power 5 teams. Sort of with you, I won't know who this Bulls team is really until next week's game against Liberty, which is a little more of an even comparison.
Right, especially if the coach works on the sideline.
True.
Which will help out. Obviously, I've sat down, I've watched Buffalo tape, some of it from last year. Obviously, I watched the Robert Morris thing as well. When you looked at Penn State, what did you think? I mean, I know it's one game and I know it's Idaho, but what did you think?
Two things jumped out at me, Steve, because remember, this is the first time we're playing you guys since 2015.
Right.
Incredibly more athletic and deeper than the team was in 2015, even though you had Barkley on that. Well, that's what you remember from the 2015 team. That was Barkley's first 100-yard game,
yeah.
And you're like, whoa, who's this guy?
That was also the hurdle game, too, the first time
he
hurdled
over that. Yeah, that's the play we all talk about, that leap over the safety. But obviously, Penn State's so much more athletic and so much bigger, and even Lance Leipold pointed that out there. They're just long and bigger at every position. So that's kind of what I remember, you know, about that game back then. More weapons, you know. I mean, I think from when I watched the Penn State game, I think it looks like your defense is really, really good. And Gross Matos is going to be a really fun guy to watch. I already talked to some scouts that were in scouting Buffalo, and they're like, that guy's he's a stud. Just half, one of the scouts told me half the guys in the NFL can't block him now. So you know that. And the running backs, and Hamler's a great player. I mean, quarterback, I think you'd say you don't necessarily know exactly what Clifford is. He did a lot of good things, but who'd he do it against?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Paul, a pleasure. Really looking forward to seeing with you and talking with you on Saturday night. It'll be great to have you back.
You got it. I look forward to it as well, too. Thanks, Steve.
Paul Peck, the play-by-play voice of Buffalo football. And if I were to look at, to tell you from tape what I see, the two running backs are the key to this whole thing. Jarrett Patterson reminds me of Ricky Slade. Kevin Marks reminds me of Noah Cain. So if you're wondering about styles, those are the styles. I think Patterson's more the style of Slade, and Marks is more the style of Noah Cain. As for Myers, I can tell you with him, I can see why they like him. I think he is a very good ball handler, fakes very well, but as a thrower, locks on one guy. And that's to be expected. He's a redshirt freshman. That's to be expected. But he does lock on one guy. Three or four of those offensive linemen are really good. And defensively, the two ends, Jarrett Patterson's twin brother, James, the linebacker, and Banks, number nine, are the four best players they have over there. That's who they are. And Penn State's got to go out and they got to play their game. And again, this is not intentional because these schedules are done so far in advance. But this schedule fits this team. The schedule fits this team. Get out of the gate, you play a game. Now you need to play somebody better. They're playing somebody better. Then after that, you need to play somebody better than that. They're playing somebody better than that. Then you get a sort of bye week. And then you get into conference play and play somebody better than that. So it builds each week. Now, when I say a sort of bye week, the second bye week is a full bye week for Penn State. Okay, the second one is. You're saying, well, why not the first one? Because of the Friday game the next week. Because what they will do is they'll do the first week a little, you know, obviously not as hard or not as long, but they will then come back on Saturday. And they'll do their normal Sunday practice Saturday. Then they'll have Sunday off. This is after the Pitt game and before Maryland. Because Sunday would be Monday. Then Monday will be like a Tuesday practice. Tuesday will be like a Wednesday practice. Wednesday will be the Thursday practice. And then Thursday's the travel day and then the game. See, that's why it's not fully thought of and designed as a bye week. So that's what will make that different. Now, that's down the road. They still have two more games before we get to that conversation. But that's what they're doing. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sudbury, the Beverage Supermarket. It's a 7:30 game tomorrow. You must tailgate and do so in style. How about great specials at Brewers Outlet? Between now and Tuesday, Milwaukee's Best Light and Ice 24-pack cans, just $9.49. Genesee Oktoberfest. Yes, it felt like Oktoberfest weather this morning. I loved it. 12-pack cans, just $7.97. Imports, Domestics, Microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, I might add, indeed, second to none. Although, Buhner loves the garlic. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus in the next half hour. And then our picks in the final half hour. I have good news and bad news, by the way, from last night.
Oh, do tell? Or after the break?
Oh, no. I can do it right now.
Okay.
The good news is the Bears-Packers game is over.
That was preseason week number 5, wasn't it?
Right. The bad news is it was nationally televised. I'm watching that game last night. Okay, then, you know, the Packers get their drive and they score. Okay, I'm watching. And then finally, at some point, I turn over to Dr. No on Turner. On Turner Movie Classics. I'm like, hey, I'll watch this. Turner Classic Movies. And I flipped back and saw nothing was happening, so I flipped back to Dr. No. And then I flipped back to the game. And game's going along. All of a sudden, the Bears have a third down and 30, and then they end up with a fourth and 40. And I turned it back, and it was, let's see, what was next? Oh, From Russia With Love. Like, yeah, the Bonfest.
Yeah, that same drive with the Bears last night where they had the two delay of game penalties, that was,
oh,
come on.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. Roger Goodell's looking down saying, this is what we're promoting to the networks. Yet the ratings were up last night. Do you know that?
How about that?
The ratings were up. How about that? So, ratings-wise, they did okay.
I had a few people on my Facebook page or on my Facebook feed last night complaining about the pregame stuff, and I go, let's see. What'd Steve do? It's like I replied to a few people. I got an idea. Turn it on 1 minute before kick, and you'll be fine.
That's where I was. That's where I was.
Meek Mill, Megan Trainor.
I was like, this. Sorry, I'm not happening.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it. Yeah. Couldn't tell you in a million years who was on. But I started watching the game, and I started wondering if maybe I should have watched that instead. Oh, I mean, look, I don't mind a good defensive game, but like that was not. I mean, the defense has played well, you know. But my goodness, that was a setback. That was a setback. Yeah. Wow.
Can only get better from here.
Well, we got your guys on Sunday night, and we already know that they've got allergies.
Yeah. AFC Championship preview, perhaps? Maybe?
Your team has allergies. Go ahead, ask the question.
Okay. Why do they have allergies?
They're allergic to Foxborough. They never play well.
Oh, against Brady. Oh, you kidding me? Yeah, we got some stats about Tom versus Pittsburgh we'll throw in during the pick segment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do we need to take a break here?
Yeah, we can do that.
It is the bottom of the hour.
That's right.
Has he already left the building?
I haven't seen him today.
We should get a banner together and hang a banner at Shikellamy.
Oh, okay. Like, I thought you were going to say over at Central Columbia, over the bowling banner in the gym.
No.
Look, okay.
No, this is in honor of Mr. 298. Okay? This is, like, you and I put a banner. Like, award-winning, congratulations, Kevin Herr, award-winning broadcaster.
Love it.
Right? And make it seem like he's self-promoting himself.
Home opener tonight.
Oh, yeah. Who do they have tonight?
They've got Loyal Sock tonight.
Boy. If Shikellamy could get an extra point, I think it could make the highlights.
They will. That's true. Could be on game night tonight. You're right.
No, not just game night. I'm talking about, like, in the promo.
Oh.
We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstores, ready for all of your warm weather activities. Camping, picnics, grilling, visit Brewers Outlet first. For microbrews, imports, domestic specialties, they got them. Grab some pickles at the Pickle Bar, Steve Jones's favorite place. Snacks, Brewers Outlet has that covered. Soda, sports drinks, check. Weekly specials, too. And there's lots of convenient parking. So get all the refreshments everyone will love for your next outdoor gathering at Brewers Outlet, the beverage superstock superstore, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, so the other night, I only watched like 10 minutes of it, but the old Bernie Mac movie, Mr. 3000.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know what that reminded me of? The guy we call Mr. 298.
That's 15 years old, that movie, Mr. 3000. Wow.
I know. Now, he passed away how long ago?
That's right, he did. Very unexpectedly.
Yeah.
That's right. Angela Bassett was in that movie. She's the one that portrayed...
Angela Bassett's in that movie?
Yeah, she portrayed Tina Turner in her biopic, What's Love Got to Do with It, from 93. She was outstanding in that movie.
Oh, she was in Mission Impossible Fallout. And I think she's going to be in the next one, too, as the head of the CIA.
Oh, and Bernie Mac passed in 2008.
Yeah. But I'm watching that last night. All I kept the other night, it was the like maybe a week ago. And all I kept thinking of was Mr. 298.
I was slipping through the channels over the holiday weekend, and I found one, I can't remember which, may have been TV1. They were running a Bernie Mac show marathon.
Really?
Yeah, funny show.
I never saw his show, but I thought the Mr. 3000 movie was funny.
Yeah.
The premise is that he has 3,000 hits. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame, it looks like, the whole deal. And they found out through some accounting error, he actually has 2,995 hits. Right. So he ends up getting four hits. He still gets in the Hall of Fame with 2,999 hits, and he's running a Mr. Softy truck called Mr. 2999. So I thought, my goodness, we work with Mr. 298. He'll be on tonight with Dave Ritchie, who... in just a short period of time, is now considered the rudder of that broadcast.
Yeah.
Just telling you. Are you going to tell me I'm wrong?
We love the chief.
Love the chief. I think he's the rudder. All right. Pro Football Focus. And we take a look at the college side with Pro Football Focus. Cam Meller, who is part of our weekly rotation now, breaking down the numbers. Hi, Cam. It's always great to talk with somebody of your caliber that breaks the numbers down.
It's great to be here. It's great to have both levels of football now fully back in swing with tonight's game. It's a truly exciting time.
Absolutely. So let's get to opening week of college football, because now you at least have some data to work with. Number one, when you finally got to sleep, did you sleep well?
I did. I slept for about 2 hours, and that was it, back in the studio Sunday morning after watching the Pac-12 at dark. 2 hours, you know, it's like Christmas, so Santa Claus doesn't sleep on Christmas or Christmas Eve. Why would we sleep here?
Mike Leach doesn't even watch Pac-12 after dark. I mean,
he's on to something.
I know, he's on to something. All right, so week one, let's talk about we'll get to the Penn State part of it right out of the gate. What were some things? You know, look, they win 79-7, so there's going to be a lot of people that grade out great and whatever. But who really stood out?
So I think you got to start with KJ Hamler. You know, we always take flack for these blowout games. You know, not enough players represented on our teams of the week, our moments like that. Maryland wins 79-0, and they don't get a player on defense or on offense on the first team. It's just because it's a full team victory, or not enough players actually play enough snaps to truly, really grade super high. Hamler, not the case. Four targets, all four receptions. So it was 150, both touchdowns, but all the receptions moved the chains for a receiving conversion. That's a touchdown or a first down. Didn't have a whole lot of yak, which you've come to expect from him. Right. But it really, you know, two of those catches were contested that we have in our book. And so he actually landed on our spot of breakout candidates for potentially the draft as well. So we've got our eye on him for the draft, but he definitely was the standout from the performance on offense. And I think going forward, that speaks to, you know, potential chemistry that him and Clifford can build to lean on. Not a bad guy to lean on.
Yeah. Now here's the next guy, the next part. When you have a defense where nobody played more than 30 plays, excuse me, John Reed had 29. How difficult is it for you to look at standout players in a game like that?
It's super tough because all the stats that normally would bucket into one player or bucket into two players, you know, all the, you know, defensive linemen would get pressures or not, but now they're separated out across the bevy of these players, you know, 30, however many players getting snaps on defense. You know, you really look into the fact that it's literally spread across double the amount of players that's normally spread across. So, and if a team does have something along the lines of 18, 20 pressures in a game, usually those would be, you know, 3, 4, 5 guys getting the majority of them. Here, I think we've got credited right now, there's upwards of 10 to 15 or even, I think, 13 or 14 players that recorded at least one pressure on the team, which is just kind of, it's almost unheard of, but that's where we see these, you know, cupcake games, and I'm doing air quotes here, these cupcake games that right. We see, you know, everything spread out. So it is a little bit more difficult to really garner, you know, a lot of information that we don't already know on these players. And so obviously, guys, like Gross Matos did play very well, just, you know, super limited sample size from what we got. But, you know, you don't do that well on a little sample size without us catching notice, too. So it is a little difficult, and you got to kind of read between the lines from the analytical lens a little bit.
All right, let's escape Penn State for a moment. Now let's get to how a guy like Jalen Hurts graded out. Did Jalen Hurts grade out in his 6th touchdown performance against Oklahoma?
You know, he vaulted to, I think, what we would call our, if Heisman's are won in September, he would have won the Heisman already type of deal. The grades were super, super awesome, elite grades, but you isolated out, actually, he did everything you'd want him to in that offense.
Right.
That offense breeds productivity. He hit, it was 18 of his total passes were actually within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And right. So he's buoyed by that long, wide open pass that he hit to CeeDee Lamb that nobody was within 20 yards of him. You know, in terms of his depth of target, and that's kind of where these games in which they do blow out oppositions or their opponents, you know, you look at those things. So he was 18 of 18 for 254 of his yards and 2 touchdowns through the air on these passes that are targeted within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So not the majority of his passes were past the first down sticks either. And so that's what you hope that changes, and that's where he'd have to continue to excel in. 195 of those total passing yards also came after the catch. And that's something we've noticed in that Oklahoma offense. They scheme their receivers open, and they allow them to get the playmakers to do their thing.
See, this is a great point, because remember the game last year, and I don't have to, you know, he knows what I'm going to talk about here, and you too, Cam. Dwayne Haskins played against Penn State. One completion after another in that game was behind the line of scrimmage. Now, in the fourth quarter, he did make, obviously, a couple big plays down the field. But what does that do to not just the numbers, but also your perception of how they play when you, Cam, know that so many of these, quote, completions and yards are really just little tiny pitch and catch jobs that end up where the guy makes all the yardage on his own after the catch.
Yeah, it's a super interesting thing to look at, and that's where you have to take that into consideration. You have to look at what we call our average depth of target, and that truly showcases how far the quarterback was actually going. And it, those throws that are expected, if a quarterback's expected to hit those throws, a four-yard cross, right, every quarterback's supposed to be able to hit those at the FBS level. And so you look at it, actually, if I remember correctly, Haskins' game against Penn State last year was his lowest graded outing.
Yeah.
So he has all those short dump-offs. They don't move the needle. And so then one negative play is going to hurt your grade overall. So that being said, that in mind, Hurts did have a good grade, so he didn't. He actually avoided negative plays, didn't have a negatively graded play, right, that moved the needle too far. And so that's where, you know, I like to look at it. It's an all-encompassing thing, this whole PFF lens that we have, but there is so many levels of nuance that we have to dig through to actually get the evaluation. So it's a lot of fun, but there definitely is an asterisk when you don't average a super, super far depth of target.
Right, and that changes everything up. It changes everything up when I'm looking at a quarterback. All right, now, do you have to make the play? Do you see him? Sure. But then it's like, hey, he threw for 300 yards. Well, if I've got 250 yards after the catch, that does change my perception as to how terrific this guy is. I'm not trying to put down Jalen Hurts here. I think what you're making is a really good point. It also tells you how smart I think Lincoln Riley is of adapting what he's doing to his quarterback.
Yeah, and there was Riley noticed how good of a running back Hurts is, and he had 11 design carries, and carries 104 of his yards were on design carries, not just scrambles. So they had some really, really good run blocking, and we even had Bruce Gradkowski break it down for us and show how he compared to Baker, and they both make the same read on this exact same play, and Baker scrambles runs it for 28 yards. Hurts runs it the opposite direction, gets an amazing pull block from his guard, and next thing you know, it's his 30-plus yard run that he has. And so this offense truly does scheme towards quarterbacks and schemes towards them, you know, being able to avoid negative plays, which is a big thing, and which is where we've seen Baker succeed now at the next level as well, and we'll see if Kyler can do the same thing. So Riley, I said it too, and if Riley can pull Hurts into this Heisman discussion where he's averaging a crazy depth of target, we need to throw on the bottom of Baker, Kyler, and then eventually Hurts is Heisman with a, you know, carve on the bottom Lincoln Riley as well.
Numbers are one thing. I think what numbers do is they prevent what I call Overreaction Monday. Overreaction Monday is the first Monday after the college football season starts. And you're like, oh, they're awesome. This guy's won the Heisman. This team's in the Final Four. It's like, you know, we still have 13 more weeks to negotiate here. So let's go to, here's the other part of Overreaction Monday. And he may turn out to be terrific, but I've heard enough about the legend of Bo Nix. What do the numbers tell me about the legend of Bo Nix, who, by the way, made a couple of really nice plays in the fourth quarter?
He did, and we actually had him, that touchdown pass was actually an ill-advised decision.
Yes.
The safety probably should have come over and made the play. He didn't.
Agreed.
You know, it's a zero-graded play for us. That doesn't move the needle. We actually had an internal discussion for about 3 hours about how we maybe even wanted to downgrade that play, but the result did stand. So we give him a zero for that. It doesn't move the needle. The Bo Nix legend has began, but we have him at a 40 overall grade for the game. That's where it is. Let's not overreact. He was actually 3.5 quarters. He was pretty, you know, he didn't do what I think Gus Malzahn would have wanted. He didn't do what his offensive coordinator, what his quarterback's coach, what anybody would have really truly wanted him to do and how he can carry the game. And if it weren't for a drop, that clear drop in the end zone of Herbert's pass, you know, we're talking about a different game. But, you know, Herbert did also not play very well. Both
right.
quarterbacks were
Agreed.
Very underwhelming.
Yeah, no.
So.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Let's take analytics from days gone by. An analytic from days gone by is he completed 42% of his passes. You know, and completion percentage is an analytic, right? Just not as deep as what you have. He completed 42%. You're right. I looked at that play, and that play should have been picked.
It should have. It should have gone down as an interception, and that's where, you know, the PFF grade truly stands out, I think, from that. Even then, we look at it as his adjusted completion percentage, which takes into account drop balls, throwaways. And if you put Bo Nix out there, it's a 48.1 adjusted completion percentage. That's taking it a step further, and he still did not complete over 50% of his passes. Right. And that's concerning going forward. Now, they can obviously move this around, and if he doesn't have to throw the ball up as much, if they're trailing and he can get some speedsters and their playmakers the ball, you know, on some screen passes. But he was overall an inaccurate quarterback that night, and they got away with one.
In Power 5, I'll keep it in Power 5, which running back or running backs did very well for you, and which wide receivers did well for you? I mean, it's a very broad question.
It's a very broad question. I like it, though, but Jerry Jeudy was super impressive, and I think if they're going to go the route of feed Jerry Jeudy, then I'm all for it. You know, career-high catches with 10. He matched his career-high in targets with 13, and so if we see more of Jerry Jeudy, we've seen what happens. I think the most impressive part about that Alabama offense is the fact that those three other wide receivers could be wide receiver ones at the majority of other programs, but they're there on this short bubble screen, the duty that he does his little spinorama on, and you have Waddle and Ruggs downfield blocking 20 yards down the field to pave the way for a touchdown. These guys care about one another. You can see it on the field, and they're excellent run or downfield run blockers, essentially. So I think that stands out, and I think feed Jerry Jeudy, but give Jalen Waddle a couple of more touches. But Jeudy, if it's the feed Jeudy show, then the offense, the rest of the world needs to take notice, more so than I think they already have. But on the ground, there's two guys. Zach Moss forcing 15 missed tackles, which is unheard of in a performance. The record is 20 that we have. So 15 against BYU was just ridiculous. He's healthy. He's back, and I like that. But then Chuba Hubbard, obviously leading the nation in rushing yards, but he had, you know, 7 carries that went for over 10 yards. Over half of his yards were after contact. He also forced several missed tackles, and he moved the chains a bunch. So Hubbard obviously was against Oregon State, so maybe throw a little on there. But I do think he's got Big 12 defenses to go up against that we could see some huge numbers from Hubbard as well.
One final question for you, Cam, and it's back to Penn State for a moment. You were talking about the ability of the Alabama receivers and how they blocked. And you and I both know, that's a huge factor in making any big play is having wide receivers committed to blocking. There's a play in the Penn State game where Devin Ford goes 81 yards for a touchdown. Justin Shorter, a wide receiver, comes across the field at an angle, and you and I, you know, we all know that the emphasis on blindside blocks is there. He comes across, he gets in front, shields, may have been some contact, but the contact is with Shorter's back, right? Does that count as a wide receiver block downfield to you at all in how you grade out?
It would move the needle if he helps downfield, and if he gets in the way to cause enough of a disruption, you know, well out of the structure of what he should be doing. Yes, that'll definitely get an uptick for Shorter at the end.
Love this guy. Right? It's like he like flat out gets it. He just gets the game.
I try.
You do. It's great. Hey, thanks so much. You have no idea how much we appreciate having you on.
My pleasure. You know, I truly, truly enjoy not only talking football, but talking football with people who enjoy it. So come full circle here.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus. Do blowouts in the opening weekend correlate to anything? Believe it or not, they actually do. We'll talk about it next half hour as we continue. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.